It's the web's only podcast completely devoted to daily fantasy sports. Welcome to the Roto-Grinders Daily Fantasy Fix. Here's your host, Dan Bach.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Roto-Grinders Daily Fantasy Fix for this Wednesday. I am Dan Bach. You might know me as DB730 here in the world of Daily Fantasy. Should be a good podcast. Coming up here shortly, we'll be speaking with Travis McCoy. He is one of the, the lobbyist, I should say, for the Fantasy Sports Trade Association. Lives out there in Washington, D.C., and basically out there to protect the interests of the fantasy player. And obviously, one of the things that he is very interested in protecting is the pay-for-play, which, of course, basically is the daily fantasy, weekly fantasy sports that we enjoy and talk about so much on this podcast. So we thank him for coming on today, and we'll get to that conversation shortly. Also, we'll dip into NBA, pretty much a full slate of games, I think 11 tonight in the NBA. So we'll go over some thoughts on some statistical analysis for tonight's game, and also a little PGA Tour news and notes for you. You can get your PGA Tour on action on over there at Draft Zone and on Draft Street. So I do want to bring up a couple of guys in that. I think they head to Phoenix for the Phoenix Open. I think that's the one where there's a hole where there's it's basically like Happy Gilmore. Maybe not that, you know, rambunctious, but I guess it's a bunch of drunk people out there in Phoenix. What is it, hole 17? Is that it? Should be an interesting tournament, to say the very least, and we'll see if Phil Mickelson can actually make a cut this week. But before we do that, we had the Solo Survivor tournament start over there on Daily Joust, and after day one, yours truly is eliminated. Yes, after three solos, I hovered at about the 215 mark in all of them. And thanks to, you know, Golden State's second unit, which basically played the entire fourth quarter, that pretty much robbed me of hitting my 225 mark. But it was a rough day all around. Lots of guys out there. Some of the better players did not make it, or I should say more well-known players did not make it in the Solo Survivor Tournament. But the wonderful thing about it is now I get to cheer against all you. That's right. I hope everybody loses so that $250 rolls over. So that's the kind of cool thing about this tournament is even once you're out, it's kind of interesting. You still want to pay a little bit of attention to it so you can see if these people are going to make it or not make it. And obviously, if they don't, that's more money in the next little tournament that starts up. And if you want to get in the next Solo Survivor tournament, all you have to do is start playing some regular solo games on there, because 7 days, this is from the beginning of the tournament, you have 7 days before that to qualify. And basically, to do so, all you do is have to win one solo contest. So Solo Survivor going to continue over there on Daily Joust. Need to throw that out. But let's not delay. Let's get into this conversation. Travis McCoy, lobbyist out there in Washington for the FSTA. Joining us now on the podcast, I'm excited to bring aboard Travis McCoy. He is the chief lobbyist here for the Fantasy Sports Trade Association. So he is one of the guys out in Washington basically trying to make sure all the stuff that we enjoy so much, of course, the daily and the weekly fantasy sports, kind of stay on the up and up, stay legalized, and he is lobbying on our behalf. So, Travis, thanks a lot for taking the time for joining us here on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Dan. I really appreciate it.
Now, tell us quickly about your role as a lobbyist. I mean, what exactly do you do for the FSTA?
Okay, well, essentially, like you said, I'm a lobbyist, an attorney, and a government relations professional. And essentially what I do is for the FSTA is I make sure that the UIGEA Act of 2006, which is what had the carve-out, the fantasy sports carve-out in it, you might be aware that it's what illegalized online gambling, but there is a carve-out that legalizes fantasy pay-to-play games. So what I do is I make sure that stays safe and stays protected. And then I also then go to, there's about nine different states where, because of some of their older laws and whatnot, even though nationally on the federal level, the UIGEA Act of 2006 legalizes pay-to-play games. What I do is on the state level try to get those states that have these anachronistic laws to change those laws so that pay-to-play games in those states can be legalized.
Now, where are we in terms of getting some of these states to change some of those laws? I think I read somewhere recently, maybe Maryland, we could have something changed in the near future. Give me a rundown on how that's looking.
Right now, we're working with Maryland, there's actually a bill that's been introduced this term. So we're working with the legislators there to try to get that passed. We've also had feelers out in about three other states. We've had feelers out in Montana, Washington, and Arizona. Now, I'm not saying anything is going to get done, you know, magically in those states anytime in the relatively near future here, but it is something that we've started the process of looking at and trying to see where we can go, what we can do, and see what kind of hay we can make.
Now, my question is, how come these states, I'm not the political lawyer here or know exactly, you know, how this works, but, you know, the government views this type of fantasy sports is legal, but yet these states don't. I mean, why wouldn't they look at it from the perspective of the government says it's legal, the U.S. says it's legal, but, you know, but for whatever reason we don't? Like, I'm still confused as to why there's this issue on a local level, and what do you run into in terms of talking to some of these states or some of these lawmakers as to why they don't want to basically overturn the rule that they have in place?
Sure. Well, first off, the reason that that it's pay-to-play gaming is illegal in some states, but is legal on the federal level, has to do with constitutional law. In the United States, you know, anything that the federal government can make laws that govern the states. Now, a state law cannot abrogate a government law, can't break a government law, or a federal government law. However, a state can make a law more strict. So, for instance, you know, to make it easy, say there's an environmental law that says you can only have X amount of pollution in the air, and that's a federal law, and say that's, you know, I don't have any numbers here, but say 5 grams per whatever of oxygen. A state couldn't make it less than that, but a state could make it more strict. So a state could say, you know what, the federal government says that you can have, you know, 5 grams per unit of oxygen. We're going to say you can only have 3 grams. And that's what I'm trying to say here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so on the federal level, yes, the federal government made it legal nationwide to play these games. However, in these certain states, because they're allowed to make the rules and the laws more strict than the federal government does, some of their laws, most of them have been on the books for years. There's a few states that have actual language pertaining to fantasy sports gaming and that sort of thing. But most of them are old laws that don't take into account the Internet and new games, like such as fantasy sports and things like that, that are being played on the Internet. And that's where you're getting more problems than anywhere else.
Is it a situation, though, where they don't find it to be an important issue to deal with, and they say, you know, what does it really matter? We're not going to waste our time on it. I mean, why are they not willing to change some of the laws?
Well, the problem lies in some of them, and I never use this word when talking about, you know, fantasy sports gaming, but some of it look at it as it, like it's gambling, and that's where the problems lie, and they don't want, especially in a time where the country seems to be trending a little bit more conservative, and its politics, legislators and politicians are going to be wary of doing anything that is going to, especially conservatives are going to be doing things that are going to make, you know, gambling, you know, more out there, more available to the general public. That being said, there's also seems to be in the United States another wave of thinking about the gambling where it's, you know, allow it but tax it, and you find those people in both parties. But fantasy sports is a fun way, you know, it's a fun thing to do. You know, people have a lot of fun doing it. So a lot of these politicians, I think, would get on board if there weren't just that one gambling aspect that keeps rearing its ugly head.
Yeah.
And hopefully, you know, part of my job is to make sure that, you know, these politicians don't see it in that way.
And that kind of leads me to my next question about the G word. I mean, we had a big discussion on our forums about, you know, does it even make sense for us to refer to it as gambling? I mean, obviously the government doesn't look at it like it, but if you look at the game itself, I mean, there are a lot of similarities, especially for the daily and weekly games that a lot of the listeners of this podcast deal in, where, you know, the sites take a rake off of every game, the same way poker took a rake off of every hand. I mean, is there something that we can learn as, you know, daily fantasy players and site owners out there from what happened with poker, so we don't run into some of the same problems that they did that, you know, basically outlawed their game here in the United States?
Yeah, you know, the first thing I would do is I would never, ever reference fantasy pay-to-play games as gambling. I would call it gaming. I would, you know, whether it be, you know, on forums, whether it be in advertising or anything else, I would really hold back on using, you know, like you say, using the G word, and instead use a word like gaming and things like that. I think that's the biggest thing. I think another thing that needs to, you know, to people need to be wary of, or especially site owners, and, you know, or when more and more of these sites come out that aren't maybe legitimate, and I haven't heard of that happening, but, you know, with more and more of these pay-to-play sites, eventually that's going to happen, and then that's going to bring up bad publicity as well. And that's another thing. You don't want there to be sites where people aren't getting paid, because then people get upset, people start complaining, and that's when, you know, politicians and prosecutors and people like that start to take notice and start to take a look at what's going on with these games. And, you know, the whole idea is we want to keep the, you know, the notion in people's heads, especially the politicians and the public at large, that these are fun games where you can win money. You don't want to put in their heads this is gambling, because then people will look at it in a completely different way. Instead of it being a fun hobby where you can, you know, make money, yada yada yada, they will look at it as, oh, this is, like you say, just like poker. It's just another extension of poker.
We're joined by Travis McCoy. He's lobbyist for the FSTA. And tell me about the UIGEA. I mean, why was there this fantasy sports exemption? I mean, how come that was allowed and pretty much everything else wasn't?
You know, I wasn't working on it on the bill at that time. That was back in 06. And to be honest, I was finishing up law school in 06. So I wasn't actually on the Hill, so I can't really speak to what the legislators were thinking or what their motives were. But, you know, if I had to guess, I would probably say that there are very few legislators and politicians out there that, you know, want to make fantasy sports players angry. There are a lot of us out there, mm-hmm. In this country. You know, there's at least 10% of the population plays fantasy sports, you know, in some fashion. And so, you know, politicians don't want to anger that large percentage of the population, especially when the issue at bar is something that the general public sees as a fun, innocuous, non-threatening way to spend time, rather than, like I said before, the gambling aspect.
The interesting thing I kind of saw out of this whole thing is that the pay for play from the daily and weekly side of things basically came out of the UIGEA, because there really wasn't a whole lot of daily fantasy out there until people kind of went through that law with the fine tooth comb and said, you know, hey, we might have something here. I'm doubting this is going to happen, simply because, like we mentioned before, it seems like the pendulum's swinging the opposite way to kind of allowing more things. But is there any chance that, you know, lawmakers might look at this and at some point in time and say, hey, you know what? They've basically found a loophole in this law, and that's really not what our intentions was. Because personally, I honestly believe the intentions were to serve the more of the season-long players who might run leagues with their buddies, have some cash involved, because let's face it, at the time, there really wasn't a whole lot of pay-for-play websites, per se, out there. Is that something that you kind of keep your eye on, is being somebody out in Washington, and is this something that we even have to worry about?
You know, I would say that you don't have to worry about it right now. Obviously, in the world of politics, things can change and the weather can change very quickly. But yes, I do keep my eye on that on a daily basis. I'm always just checking to make sure that no one's sniffing around that bill. You know, I talk to my contacts and things like that just to make sure that nothing's going on. I don't see it changing. You know, you've got in the Senate, you've got the Democrats in the House, you've got the Republicans, you know, and then you have a Democrat in the White House. So I just really don't see there to be a big push to change it. I think they've got bigger fish to fry, so to speak, right now.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, with the economy the way it is, I don't see the legislature, you know, especially even, you know, the House or the Senate, wanting to do away with businesses that are making money and employing people and, you know, paying taxes and things like that. I don't think they want to do that right now. When the economy improves and everybody's happy, will that change? Who knows? Like I said, politics is a very fickle animal, and it does change, you know, with the wind. But that all that being said, I don't foresee there being too much of a danger in the near future. I think site owners and players who enjoy playing the games and things like that, I'm one of them. I think they can, you know, breathe easy for now, you know, at least for the next year or two. I just don't see it happening. I think that, you know, with the presidential election, with the economy, with all those things, all the moving parts that are going on in Washington right now, I just don't see them wanting to risk, you know, risk themselves politically to try to, you know, get rid of a business that is making money, employing people, paying taxes, and that sort of thing.
Now, I'm not suggesting that anybody, you know, make their vote based on, you know, daily fantasy or weekly fantasy, but we do have elections coming in November. From a political side of things, Democrats or Republican, which side would you say is leaning more towards less restrictions in this sort of, you know, online gaming type, you know, world that daily fantasy and poker and other things are? Which, you know, which side, I guess, you know, do you think is in favor of less restrictions with this?
You know, it's really hard to answer that question. In 2006, it was the Republicans that passed the UIGEA mm-hmm. of 2006 and put in the carve-out. That being said, traditionally, you usually have Democrats as the people who are, you know, more conducive to these sorts of gaming systems and things like that. You know, I don't really know who would be more likely to help out the fantasy community. I don't think right now it's partisan based, which is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a lot easier for us if we, me in particular, if I can meet with, you know, both sides of the aisle and be able to talk with them equally without, you know, okay, well, I've got to go to the Republicans because, you know, they're in favor of it, the Democrats aren't. So it's really hard to say, you know, who, you know, and, you know, through the eyes of, you know, the fantasy world, who the good guys are and who the bad guys are in terms of, you know, Republicans or Democrats. That being said, I would always suggest to all, you know, anyone who plays these games to write to their, you know, to their congressman on the state and the federal level to, you know, say, keep this legal or make it legal, things like that. Those letters always help. Those letters are always positive. It gives momentum to what we're doing. But I don't really believe that there is one side or another that is necessarily pro or anti, you know, fantasy gaming.
Very interesting. You mentioned earlier that you are a pay-for-play player yourself. You're a big fantasy sports guy.
Correct.
How was it like to get the call when they said, hey, what do you think about lobbying for fantasy sports? I mean, that's got to be like one of the coolest lobbies to have out there because, you know, who wouldn't want to have to, you know, kind of protect obviously an issue that you enjoy so much? I mean, how did that phone call start?
Well, it was truly a dream come true. I was really excited about it. I still am, you know, a year and a half later, very excited to be working with the FSTA and helping move, you know, forward, you know, their goals and things like that on the political level and whatever I can do. You know, it actually took a while. I contacted the FSTA, back in, I guess it was April or May of 2010, 2009, I don't remember which, in any case, and we just started talking, and they were definitely very interested, and we were just kind of going back and forth and discussing what I could do for them and, you know, what the state of the industry and things like that. And they wanted to make sure I was the right fit for them, so they had me go to a conference where I, you know, I presented to, it was the Chicago conference back in 2010, the summer conference for the FSTA, and I presented there and met with the board and things like that. And so, you know, and after I met with them, we met several other times, I wrote out some things. So they really sat down and worked hard, looked at it, you know, studied the situation, made sure I was the right guy. And I was very, very happy when they chose me to be leading this charge right now. And I, like I said, I've enjoyed it. I feel very honored, very blessed to be able to get the opportunity. So I'm just very happy to, you know, to be working in two fields that I really love, and that's fantasy sports and politics.
Well, and the cool thing too is it's only going to get bigger. I mean, I, you know, sit here every day and talk about the daily fantasy game, and it's like every couple months a new site pretty much comes on board. So, I, you know, the fact that it's growing at the speed that it is, I think there's just going to be more and more attention and probably a little bit more work for you. But that's why they hired you. That's why they
hired you.
Now, tell me real quick. I got to ask. You know, you were a former aide to Speaker John Boehner. Does his tan look as good in person as it does on TV?
It looks even better in person than it does on TV.
I had to ask. I had to ask because I'll tell you what, man. That guy, he either spends lots of time in the sun or he spends lots of time in the tanning booth. Either way, he looks pretty good.
Yeah, when Speaker Boehner isn't running the House of Representatives, he likes to go out and golf, and that gives him a very deep and nice tan. And he always looks great when he's on C-SPAN.
Hey Travis, I thank you so much. If I ever see anything new going on, I won't hesitate to call you and talk about it because I know a lot of people are interested about this industry. And keep up the good work trying to open it up to even more players out there, because I know the more players they are, that's better for everybody. So again, appreciate your work and appreciate you taking the time with us.
Absolutely. Thank you. And I appreciate you talking with me today.
Let's move on to the NBA for tonight. Busy, busy games. Busy, busy night. 11 games to look at. First one we are going to discuss is going to be the Washington Wizards. They take on the Orlando Magic. And Magic are just in disarray right now. And normally you'd say, well, it's the Wizards. They should definitely win this game. But you never know with the way that they're playing. But the Wizards have lost 47 out of their last 51 road games. So if the Magic were ever going to get it going, this would be it against this Wizards team. And Dwight Howard, obviously always a smart play. Doesn't take a genius to figure that out. He's averaged 26 points in his last 7 games against the Wizards. And get this, he's been shooting 77.8% from the field. That is insane. So they obviously don't have anybody who can match up with Dwight Howard. Trevor Booker had a nice game last time out for Washington. Probably will get the start again with Andre Blotch more than likely out. And the one thing about him, though, just kind of beware, is he is more of an undersized guy. He's not like Andre Blotch, who's like 6'10". This guy's one of the more shorter, I guess, power forwards out there. So I don't know how great of a matchup he's going to have going against the tough inside of Dwight Howard. And, you know, Ryan Anderson has a little bit of height to him as well. So beware on Trevor Booker, even though nice value and he's getting minutes. Not sure he's going to repeat the performance he had the other day. Bulls and 76ers, this should probably be a pretty low-scoring game. Both of these teams play very good defense. Derrick Rose, though, looking very good as of late. I think he's overcome that turf toe injury to the best of his ability. And like I say, with Philly, one of the toughest Ds in the league, I'm not going to probably look too much in this game. Maybe two guys to look at, though, is Joakim Noah. He's starting to look good. Double-doubles, it seems like, night in and night out. And Carlos Boozer's actually done pretty well against Philadelphia. Averaged 20 points, 11 boards last year against the 76ers. Raptors head to the Celtics. Rajon Rondo could return tonight, so we will keep our eye on that. So if he does play, you can probably downgrade Paul Pierce a little bit, who's definitely stepped it up in Rondo's absence. But with this being the second night of a back-to-back, and I guess that Rondo traveled to Cleveland last game, and whenever guys go on the road like that, pretty good chance that they may end up playing the next game. So look for Rondo maybe to be in the lineup. I certainly wouldn't use him simply because there's a good chance they might limit his minutes. But again, downgrade Paul Pierce if that happens. Ed Davis could be a pretty decent sleeper. Boston, they're pretty good defensively, but they're still soft on the glass. I think Anderson Varejão had like 20 rebounds yesterday, and Ed Davis is probably the guy who's going to be getting most of the rebounds out there for Toronto. So a guy who's not overly expensive who could put up some decent numbers tonight. Pistons head to New Jersey to take on the Nets. Anthony Morrow, a great game for him yesterday, 28 points. Should be getting lots of minutes again. Marshawn Brooks will still be out. Darren Williams, though, has been hot, 34-7 last game against Detroit, and averaging 30 points a game over the last four. So the guy has definitely been getting it done. Detroit, they've been allowing over 100 points per game in their last six. So the Nets probably going to have no problem putting points up on the board against this lousy Pistons team. 1-11 so far on the road. So don't like their chances tonight. Suns and Hornets, not a lot to get excited in this game. Maybe Jarrett Jack against Phoenix. Guards usually do pretty well. Maybe Gortat again for Phoenix as well, but nothing much else really exciting in this game. I actually somehow sat through a Phoenix Suns game the other night, and they are just so awful, especially with Steve Nash. They just have nothing going. I would probably pass on many players in that matchup. Thunder and Mavericks tonight. Dirk Nowitzki, I watched him the other evening, and he looks pretty slow. He just does not look like the player he did before. Now, that was the second game off of back-to-back, and of course, he just came off that layoff. He averaged 32 points against them in their last playoff series, and had a couple of 40-point games. Obviously, in the playoffs, it's a totally different type of game than just a random regular season game. But Vince Carter, though, is the guy who's really kind of stepped it up. He's averaging 18 points in their three-game win streak. I'm not a fan of taking Vince Carter, but, you know, he's actually putting some decent numbers up there. But Roddy Bubois is the guy that I definitely like. 14.7 assists as a starter with Jason Kidd out. And you saw what Chris Paul did against Oklahoma City. Now, obviously, Bubois is no Chris Paul, but he's that same type of very quick guard and can drive to the hole and make things happen. So I think he's a good play tonight. Russell Westbrook, 25 points on average over his last seven games. While Kevin Durant, he's got a 20-point average against the Mavericks, and that's actually one of his lowest in the regular season. But the guy's just been lighting it up. He's having a phenomenal season for Oklahoma City, so I don't think that's a reason not to play him. James Harden coming off just a horrible shooting game. He's averaging 15 points for his career against the Mavs, but before the last game, he was red hot. So it's kind of iffy. You know, if he gets back to that player that he was before, probably going to have a good game, but more than likely to get the start again if Cephalosha can't go for the Thunder. Next game, Miami, they take on the Milwaukee Bucks. Dwayne Wade heads back to the city that he played his college ball in, and I think Dwayne Wade's going to be having a nice game tonight. And on different sites, I think Daily Joust, he's at like 165K, which isn't bad when you look at like a LeBron's at 217. So you're saving yourself about 50,000. And you look at his production in his game since he's returned from injury, it's been pretty solid. I think he had about 32 fantasy points, but he only played 24 minutes the last time out. So if he played closer to, you know, 35 minutes, yeah, he's sitting in the 40s likely in that game. So I like Dwayne Wade tonight for the Miami Heat. Brandon Jennings been red hot, 23.5 points on average over the last eight, and he's a much better player at home than he is on the road. So he's got a lot of things going for him. And Drew Gooden, 20 points, 9 rebounds on average as a starter for the Bucks. So he's definitely making good use out of his playing time with Andrew Bogut out for injury. Minnesota Timberwolves, they play host to the Pacers, and Michael Beasley's just been killing it off the bench since he's coming off of his injury. And some people might wonder if he's taking shots away from Kevin Love. He might be, but you know, K-Love's just a stud any way you look at it. Had 21 rebounds last game against Indianapolis. Tyler Hansborough, interestingly enough, had 21 in that first matchup between these two, but he has definitely been not producing, not getting the minutes out there for Indiana. Granger has been better as of late, but he's only a 30% shooter in Minnesota. That's his worst out of any building in the NBA, so buyer beware on Danny Granger tonight. Paul George, though, top scorer over the last two games, and George Hill looks like he had a broken bone or something in his leg. He is out indefinitely, so maybe a few more minutes for Paul George than normal. Houston takes on the Spurs, and Houston's allowed San Antonio 100 points in 9 out of the last 10 games and gave up a 42-point quarter just the last game against Minnesota, so they are not playing very good defense at all. Normally, you'd think Tony Parker would be a great play. Might be, but he's in a little bit of a shooting funk. Only 4 for 20 shooting in his last two games, but he's scored 20 or more in 5 of 6 home games against Houston, so likely he'll probably get back on track tonight. Kevin Martin's been playing well, 26 points on average in the last 5 games against the Spurs, and Chase Budinger has been getting more and more minutes, it seems, and producing for the Rockets. And Samuel Dalembert, look at his game logs. One of the most consistent guys out there. He's like, he's never probably going to get you like 40 points, but he's never going to have one of those under 20 points. He's like right around like the 25 to 28 point range every single night. So maybe a cheaper, steady play for you at the center position tonight for the Rockets. Bobcats head to the Blazers, and the Bobcats just suck. I mean, I watched that game versus the Lakers last night, and if you want your stone cold lock of the night, it's LaMarcus Aldridge. He should eat up this Bobcats team. I mean, Andrew Bynum, Paul Gasol had no trouble at all in the paint, so it makes you think that LaMarcus is going to have a good game. Camby will probably clean the glass, might have a monster rebounding game. So I would expect those two to do well. Nicholas Batum is still out, so definitely do not play him after he got banged up his last outing. But the question is, will this game go into the fourth quarter? You saw a lot of guys like Kobe yesterday get off to a hot start, but didn't hardly play much in the second half. So that's the danger you have when you have such a lousy Bobcats team. They're 3-19, 1-11 on the road, going against the Trailblazers team that's 9-1 at home. So pretty obvious of what's going to happen in that one. This game, though, should be interesting. Clippers head to the Utah Jazz. Clippers, they really struggle in Utah. So bad to the point that they haven't won since 2003. That's right, 9 years without a win in Utah. Now, I think they actually are going to get it tonight because Chris Paul, he is just amazing. I mean, his stats the last few games have just been phenomenal. He's back at that like MVP level that he was playing at a couple years ago, and he's really starting to kind of get in a groove with some of the other guys out there on the Clippers, and that's going to happen. It's going to take a little while for you to get into that groove, and now that he seems to be fully healthy, you know, if you can afford him, he's an obvious play. Al Jefferson, still question mark whether he's going to play or not. If he doesn't, Derek Favors might be getting a start. Could be a good value play there. And CJ Miles, not overly expensive, not an exciting guy, but he's been scoring some points. So if you're looking for maybe a cheaper, small forward, shooting guard type option, CJ Miles could get it done against a Clippers team that do allow a decent number of points. So that's your NBA look up and down for tonight. Appreciate you taking this into consideration. And of course, we will return with more of these coming on tomorrow's podcast. But we're not done yet. Let's move on. Talk some golf. That's right. PGA Tour continues.
Four.
That's a fine shot.
Oh! I should have yelled two.
Why don't we walk this off, sir?
And they head to Arizona this week. And, of course, you can get all your action over there on Draft Street and Draft Zone. Definitely an entertaining game. Gives you something to keep your eye on over the weekend. Not that, you know, there's only a Super Bowl that you could watch on Sunday. But, you know, gives you a little bit of entertainment nonetheless. A couple guys to look at. Here's some cheap guys to look at because, you know, the top guys, I think Bill Haas is a smart pick. Matt Kuchar, he's probably a stud that I'm going to go with this week. Probably got to stay away from Phil Mickelson again, even though he usually plays well in this tournament when he actually enters. He missed the cut last week at Torrey Pines, which is a course that he usually eats up. So for how much he's costing salary-wise, I think you got to stay away from Phil Mickelson. But here's a couple of cheap guys to look at. Ryuji Yamada, he hasn't made many top fives or top 25s recently in the PGA Tour, but he always plays well here. Three top 15s at this course, including his last two starts, he's had top 15 finishes. Again, these are guys who you're going to fill up the back end of your roster. Not going to anchor anything, but hopefully they can make the cut and make that top 15, and he's kind of have a track record of doing so. Josh Teeter, another guy. I have really no idea who this guy is, but he's cheap, and he's made like 13 straight cuts. And especially when you're playing fantasy golf, it's more important. It's very important to have guys that get to the weekend, because if they don't get to the weekend, then they can't compile you stats. This guy's been doing that week in and week out. Not flashy, probably not going to win the tournament, but can he give you a top 25? He's been doing it lately. So Josh Teeter, I think he's only like 9K over there. Somebody else to look at. And last guy I've read a lot about is Jason Duffner. I think he lost in a playoff here last year. Obviously, he did really well in that U.S. Open before he basically choked down the stretch and lost to Keegan Bradley. And he's been hitting the ball well, so take a look at him. A little more expensive option is Jason Duffner, but a lot of people high on him coming up this weekend in the PGA Tour. So that's a quick rundown of just a few guys you might want to take a look at. Again, Draft Zone, Draft Street, that's where you can get your PGA action on. Before we wrap up the podcast, I need to say thanks to Daily Joust, the great sponsor of this show. Make sure you go over there, play your solo contest so you can get qualified for the next Solo Survivor tournament. Who knows when that's going to be? 2 days after the current one ends. That's all I know. Also, they've got a little free roll rolling out there for you for the Super Bowl. If you've got a couple of badges, again, this is kind of to avoid some of the free roll moochers out there who don't even play on sites and do nothing but kind of mooch free rolls. So you got to have, I think, two badges, and then you can enter this Super Bowl free roll tournament, which the winner is going to win a spot in the Super Joust contest, which, of course, is going to be coming up towards the middle of April. So don't miss out on that. And tons of NHL, NBA, college basketball. Good weekend of college basketball coming up, and still a good night of college basketball tonight. So all that only on Daily Joust. Great sponsor here, the Roto Grinders Daily Fantasy Fix. And with that, it's time for us to say goodbye. Thanks for checking us out. Thanks to Travis McCoy for coming on the podcast today. Do want to remind you to follow us on Twitter at Roto Grinders for all your up-to-date injury news going in the NBA, and of course anything else that comes out that will help you in your daily fantasy games. We pass those along. Also got a Facebook page. Subscribe to us on iTunes. You get the podcast to you each and every day. And if you got any feedback, please send it my way, dan@rotogrinders.com. As always, we thank you for checking us out. It's been the Roto Grinders Daily Fantasy Fix, presented by Daily Joust. Have yourself a great evening, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow. See you, folks. My name.